On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
There is a lot of concern around the actions of real estate investment funds who not only now are moving into Ireland with the intention of building their own developments and then putting them out on the rental markets, but also buying the developments built by others and then also robbing others of the chance to potentially own their own homes. To discuss that and more, I'm joined on the line by the Sinn Féin TD for Donegal and their party's finance spokesman, Piers Doherty. Piers, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Gavin.
And thank you very much for taking our call this lunchtime. Your party is bringing a motion to the Dáil this week about the treatment of these cuckoo funds. What exactly are you proposing?
Well, what we want to do is we want these funds, these investors, to stop buying up family homes in block or indeed in partial. We want to end the tax treatment, that advantage that has been given to them by successive governments, where they pay no tax within the fund. They pay no corporation tax on the huge rents that they charge. Some of these funds are charging rents of €2,400 per month in Lucan and elsewhere. We want to make sure that when they sell, dispose the assets, dispose of the houses, that they pay capital gains tax like any other company. They don't have to do that. And also we want to ensure that they pay appropriate levels of stamp duty through a stamp duty surcharge. So we need to take away the advantage. The reason why this is happening is because there is a tax structure there that makes it very lucrative for these funds to come in, which have billions of euro firepower, and then are able to outbid others in the market, be they approved housing bodies or first-time buyers. And you can see in the Sunday Business Post today them reporting that up to €80,000 has been paid by these funds because their model allows them to do it, because they don't pay any tax. They rent them out back, in most cases, in many cases, back to the state in long-term leases, and that's the model that works for them, but it's deliberately designed.
If they are outbidding the state, though, or outbidding housing bodies by up to €80,000, would putting stamp duty on them or charging corporate tax on their profits, it wouldn't necessarily bridge the gap, though, would it? Because if they can afford to outbid your average buyer or your first-time buyer or someone else by €80,000 a home, then stamp duty isn't going to bridge that gap. They're still going to have much more firepower than any other private buyer would.
Yeah, well, stamp duty is just where they acquire the purchase, but there's more than that involved. So you just think about it. The largest landlords in the state today are these funds. Some of them looking to have 5,000 apartments.
Well, the largest landlords in the state are local authorities, aren't they? Are the local authorities right now not the largest landlords in the state?
Sorry, I'm talking about private landlords. They are these funds. Sorry, I lost you there for a second, Gavin.
Okay, no worries.
So they have thousands of properties, and they intend to increase their grab in relation to rental properties, particularly in terms of Dublin. So when they pay no tax on the income that they have, the tax structure is designed in a way that it is only actually paid by the investors. But the investors in the main are the likes of pension funds internationally, which are exempt from any type of tax also on these funds. And that's why it's so lucrative. So it's not just about stamp duty. It is also looking at the other tax advantages that have been provided for these funds. Anybody who does any research in relation to IREFs or REITs will see one of the first things that they will say is these are a tax neutral type of funds. This is why people invest in them. This is why more money has been flooding into the Irish market now than ever before. And that's why they can outbid, outprice ordinary families. But it's not just that we're looking for. We're also looking for a ban where these funds would actually go in and purchase properties that have been built.
Yeah.
And look, I've listened to the government this week scrambling like headless chickens, trying to get the media lines to suggest that this only, you know, dropped from the sky this week, that Maynooth was the first time that this happened. That is codswallop.
No,
this has been happening for years. We pointed it out. Indeed, in 2019, 2,000 homes were bought by these private rental sales, majority of them by these funds. And those 2,000 were ones that were already existing stock. There was more that were bought that were new stock that were bought from the plans, but existing stock, there was over 2,000 bought in 2019. And there's been thousands of houses, existing stock, that has been stamped up by these funds. And the government know well about this because we've pointed it out to them year after year. We've tabled motions and amendments at the finance bill going back as far as 2016 to end the tax status of this. And look, it's not just us in Sinn Féin. Many in the media have been pointing this out. The UN has talked about the financialization of housing as opposed to, you know, the fact that housing should be about having a home, having a roof over your head, having that sanctuary, but the government have refused to budget any of this until the outcry.
Whether you got to hear Jim McGrann in our first hour this morning, he's a former special advisor at the Department of Housing, and he was making the argument that if you were to change planning law now, any new planning bill might be potentially 3 years in the works between all the legal proofing that it would need to be done, and then it could only apply to new developments that were applied for after that date. So it could be years before a planning change could materially change this, which means that if anything is to be done in the short term, it would be on the tax side. But what can you do specifically on the tax side that stops these funds coming in to buy the developments of others, but doesn't impede them from coming in to build the new complexes, which they were originally intended to do and which we all still ultimately want?
Okay, so it's important for people to understand that there's two types of ways that these funds can come in and purchase properties that aren't on the open market. And that is through forward funding. And forward funding is where they actually fund the developer to buy the land and to work out the housing scheme. And the second one is forward purchase. And that's where there's an agreement with the developer that they will purchase the houses at the end. Forward funding is what's been suggested by government. That doesn't happen. It's never happened in Ireland. It doesn't happen, and it's not planned to happen anytime soon, according to insiders within the industry. So that type of idea that these funds are actually putting the cash on the table for the entire estate in agreement with the developer at day dot, it doesn't happen. What is happening is forward purchase, where they basically go in, they see a developer's got planning permission for 400 houses or 900 houses in some cases, and they basically say, we'll buy them off you when you're finished. So what we need to do is we need to take away, as I said, the reason they can do this, the reason they can bid so much, and obviously from a developer, it's, even though there is demand for those houses, and they know there's a demand for those houses, they're getting a higher price from the fund, and also they have that type of certainty.
So your argument is that if you change the tax treatment, then they don't necessarily have the same firepower, or they might not be able to outbid, or might not be in a developer's interest to go straight to them. But would they not still have, even Roundhill Capital, which bought a lot of this development in Maynooth, is a fund that has 1 billion euro in firepower. So again, it goes back to the whole idea that, tinkering with taxes or levying higher taxes on them might impede them somewhat, but they're still going to have much more firepower to outbid any other collection of private buyers there's ever going to be.
Well, there's two things in that. Going back to the point that we need to look at not just tax, but we also need to look at planning in relation to this.
But if you accept the planning is going to take years to finally reach there, so you're going to have any short-term action is going to have to be in the tax side.
Absolutely, and this type of action should have been taken many years ago, but these funds are looking at a return of equity in relation to about 4%. When you actually tax them, and if you tax them appropriately, then you actually take that away from them, so therefore it doesn't become lucrative anymore. There are three reasons why these funds are investing now in a big way in Ireland that like we've never seen before. One is because of the tax neutral status of these funds. They don't pay any taxes, as I've outlined. The second thing is that across the globe, they aren't getting returns because of the negative interest rate environment. And the third reason is because they are now leasing these houses back to the state through the long-term lease initiative, something that didn't exist a number of years ago and now is in existence. And that's why they're piling on. They're actually talking as well, Gavin, that not only most of this is in Dublin and the commuter belt, but now they have their eyes on many other cities across the state. And there's a lot of interest in relation to investment in other cities. So what we're seeing in Dublin is also going to be now mirrored in the future, unless we stop this in Waterford and Cork and Limerick and Galway, as investors are looking at opportunities.
But again,
there as well.
How do you change their tax treatment so that they are impeded from buying up developments that others are planning, but still not impeding them from building their own apartment blocks, which is ultimately the only long-term solution out of a housing crisis, i.e. the provision of more homes?
Well, first of all, they're not actually doing that. They're not forward funding, and that hasn't happened. Of the 13,000 residential properties that these funds snapped up over the last 5 years, none of them was forward funding. So this is just buying off the plan, the way that many people did, 10 years ago, where they seen a housing development being built down the road from them. They would purchase off the plan, and they would pay a deposit.
Okay, but how do you change it then so that a developer still has the prospect of being able to develop? Because if there's no forward funding, if they are not building their own stuff, if they're just buying off the plans from someone else, a developer is probably doing that because they know that there's some cuckoo fund waiting in the wings that's going to make the whole thing worth their while. How do you still make sure that there is going to be the provision of housing at the volumes we need that properly channels the use of these investment funds but doesn't have them squeezing others out?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that these investment funds, in the way that they're operating, have a role in relation to domestic property. There is.
Do you think you just get rid of them altogether, or make it unviable?
They shouldn't be allowed to buy up at a time of huge demand. They shouldn't be allowed to buy up the ownership of housing and then rent it back to people at sky high rents. That is the model. Now, there is huge demand in the market, as we know, from first time buyers and from others who want to own their own property. And there is also a huge amount of money that is available for investment to actually build these type of schemes. But that type of what we have, the structure we have now, isn't about lending developers money to build the schemes and then sell on the properties. Mm. It's lending developers money to actually build the schemes, but then that they own the scheme at the end of the day, that they own the houses and they rent them back at sky high rents for the next 25 years.
But aren't these things only really in Ireland, Pearce, though, because banks aren't doing the same lending that they would have done before 2010? And the reason why we're kind of reliant almost on these funds is because banks are now so constrained and so cautious in what they'll back that they're just not going to fund a new private housing estate the way they would have done in the past.
There's truth in that, but that you have to understand the type of funding that you're talking about. So when a bank lent money to a developer to build houses, they didn't own the houses at the end of the day. They didn't buy the houses off the developer. And there is funding sources internationally in relation to investment in development of houses, which are then sold on as first-time buyers. The demand is there. Nobody would deny that there's any demand. And then the investor who invested the money or lent the money to the developer is actually paid back with the premium. That isn't what we're seeing here. What we're seeing is a structure that allows for tax neutralization, which allows for them to these funds to come in and purchase these houses and then rent them back to people in Ireland at exorbitant rents. And they're able to do that because of the tax structure. So you take that away, you take the initiative away, and as we know, when I talked about one of the reasons why the funds are here in the first place is because you have a negative interest rate environment. Mm. There is international money that is willing to actually lend for the completion of projects, and those projects then being sold to first-time buyers.
So your argument
then
is if you change the tax treatment, that there would still be enough money to fund the developments, but that they wouldn't end up all being put on the rental market, that there would be someone willing to sell them afterwards?
The demand is there. Of course there is. That's clear. This model isn't about just lending money. This model is about ownership at the end of the day, which rents to tenants over a long period of time at sky high rents. And because they pay no tax in relation to those rents, it makes that model viable. And that's the problem. That model is wrong. That model pushes up house prices, as we've seen in terms of the Sunday Business Post. Like when they're outbidding approved housing bodies by 80,000, it isn't just the approved housing body that is affected or those who wanted those homes. That sets a new market rate across the sector. They push up house prices for everybody. When these then IREFs and REITs then set prices in local areas, in some cases where these funds have the majority of rental accommodation in local areas, they then set the local rents. This was pointed out, and the dangers of this was pointed out in a report by the Department of Finance in 2019. Yet, just as late as last year, the government ignores this, ignores the fact that this is happening, and actually votes with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and the Green Party to keep the status quo going.
We have discussed in recent weeks the impact that artificially high market rates for rents have on everyone else as well. So your motion is going to be debated in the Dáil on Tuesday evening. Also taking place on Tuesday is the state opening of Parliament in the UK, and there is what appear to be fairly well-informed reports that the Queen's speech is going to include plans for there to be some kind of, if not an amnesty, then some sort of statute of limitations on any prosecutions relating to actions during the Troubles in Northern Ireland. What do you make of that?
Well, Gavin, this is an incredibly cynical move that strips away the fundamental rights and agreements that are already there, but those rights of families to seek justice for their loved ones. It's divisive, it's toxic, and it's been condemned right across the board, and rightly so. And look, last week on Wednesday, Brandon Lewis, the Secretary of State, he came to Dublin. He met with the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney. He also met with the leader of her own party, Mary Lou MacDonald, and he didn't mention the fact that the British government intention was in this regard, despite the fact of legacy being discussed. There is agreement here. An agreement goes back to 2014 under the Stormont House agreement, and again a renewed agreement last year when the Assembly was got back up and running in terms of the New Decade, New Approach agreement, which the British government have also signed up to. And that is
so the parties in the North aren't in favour of this, that they're still in favour of there being full legacy prosecutions wherever justified.
Yeah, there's a number of mechanisms that were agreed in the North in 2014. Every single party has signed up to that. The Irish government is a signatory. The British government are a signatory. It's an international agreement. The only party that is in reneging on that commitment is the British government. Mm. And they've been doing so as soon as the ink was dry in that agreement, they started to pull back from it. But it is an international agreement. They have obligations to impose, to implement that agreement. And what they're talking about in terms of an amnesty flies in the face of everything that was agreed. So the Irish government do have a role here because they are co-guarantors of that agreement. Mm-hmm. They have come out, and we welcome the fact that they've come out strong in relation to the moves by the British government. And we now need to look at international support, particularly in the terms of the US. And we know that a lot of friends in Capitol Hill are looking at this issue. They're very aware of this issue. And I think that just like the role that they played, and a very positive role that they played in relation to the Brexit negotiations, I think there's a role there for them to play along with the European Union in relation to this as well.
Not to make it partisan then, but do you think that the likes of your party's allies and the Friends of Sinn Féin organisation, as well as the Friends of Ireland Caucus in Washington, could all be brought to bear on this?
It's already happened, and that's one of the things that Friends of Sinn Féin do. They keep people in whether they're senators or Congress men or women, they keep them informed in relation to what is happening, and very informed in relation to what is happening in terms of Irish affairs in the North. And I'm sure that the Irish government's diplomatic services have also working on that issue. But you know, we've heard people like Brendan Boyle, who was on the national airwaves during the week, Congressman Boyle, with his own connections to Ireland and to Donegal, making the point that his colleagues will be coming together to look at what is the best way that they will be able to react to what the British government are reportedly about to do.
It seems as if, in lieu of there being any prosecutions, the British government is also proposing to go down this avenue of a truth and reconciliation style process, which I know is something that Sinn Féin has been calling for. At least if it wasn't the best option, or if it was a breach of previous agreements, would Sinn Féin welcome the idea of having some sort of truth commission?
Yeah, look, let's be clear, Gavin, this is nothing at all to do with truth. This is about the British Tories, what is about protecting their boys as they see it. It's all about politics in English constituencies, as we've seen the elections roll out there. And, you know, there are mechanisms, which is in the Stormont House Agreement. This was thrashed out, you know, very, very difficult, and extremely difficult to get all party agreement and with two governments in relation to how you deal with the past. And there are a number of mechanisms there that need to be implemented. The idea that the British government are going to, set up a truth commission, I think is laughable, to tell you the God's honest truth.
And you don't buy that as being a viable alternative proposal?
Look, the British government, as we know, haven't even given us the files in relation to the Dublin Monaghan bombings, despite numerous all-party agreement in Leinster House. Indeed, they still hide files from historians that go back 100 years ago in terms of the roles of the RIC and the pogroms. So, you know, the idea that the British government are going to sign up to a truth commission, that is about deflecting away from what is the issue. And the issue here is there is an international agreement of how we deal with legacy and how victims of the conflict are able to seek justice, truth, and closure in some cases. And the British government are the only party to renege on that up until now, and now have decided to actually not just renege on it, but to tear that up in a big way.
In the 1 minute that I have before I have to let you go, we've seen the results of the parliamentary elections in Scotland. The SNP one seat short of a majority, but there's now a majority of members in favour of holding a second independence referendum. Even if Westminster decides not to sanction one, do you think one should still be held anyway?
I think the result in the Scottish elections, and I was going to allude to it yesterday, somebody who was born in Glasgow myself, have a keen interest and a lot of friends and relatives still over there. I think the result for the SNP party was nothing more than massive. 14 years in government, and they're increasing their majority and directly elected.
But if there's no Westminster backing for a referendum, should they still have one?
I think there's a clear mandate now for a second referendum. Look, it's up to the people in Scotland what way they decide. But I think that you've had an election. You can see the support that has come out in relation to parties that support a second referendum in terms of the Greens and the SNP. And I think it's important, just like our own independence referendum in the North, which is part of the Good Friday Agreement, when there is a demand there, that demand needs to be met in a democratic way.
We're out of time. Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin finance spokesperson, the TD for Donegal. Thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime.